This is the April 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Jerry Goodell of Midland Research in Chicago, Illinois, and Jackie Bakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Mike Zuzulo is here as well at globalanalytics.biz. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's take up the USDA report released Thursday morning to begin with. Jackie Bakes, I think I'll start with you. Did you expect to see a 200 million bushel addition to the ending stocks for corn? That's a bit more than the average trade guess.
Well, it is. Did I expect it? I knew it could probably be almost anything, to be honest with you, especially after Poet announced yesterday that they were cutting back. I have no idea whether they have that included in that number. But I thought the thing that was interesting was, even though we came in at that number, we're still lower than we were a year ago, because we were at $2.22 billion last year. You know, so I don't know if that's what caused some of the reaction in the marketplace. You can never tell on a day before a three-day weekend, but I thought it was okay. I thought it could have been worse. Let's put it that way.
Hey, Mike Zuzulo, when you take those corn numbers from the supply and demand table in total, including what the grain stocks rolled into it for usage for feed and livestock or feed and residual, what was your assessment?
I felt like it was pretty normal, and the market had already priced it in from the ethanol mindset, especially, Todd. I think, you know, to Jackie's point, it's a moving target right now, and we all know that, but that, you know, we're still stuck in having to watch when the COVID-related economy comes back around. But I would throw out the idea, and we talked about this last Friday, is that maybe the bear didn't get fed as much in the corn with this ethanol number, because we still have yet to address the 2019 corn production number. So if we would take 200 million bushels off that, which is a very small percentage, maybe 2% of the 14 plus billion production number from last year, and then you add the feed, as you talk about the 150 million additional feed and residual, all of a sudden we're only down about 75 million bushels in terms of an increase in carryover for 1920. And I think that could be made up with the exports if the Brazilian real would drop, it would appreciate, and the ruble would appreciate. And all of a sudden we'd see these export markets start to kick into gear like we did on the weekly export sales with that marketing year high in corn.
Yeah, Wayne Nelson, that was a good number that came in for corn. It wasn't too bad this week.
No, the export were very good, and we have some hope there. Basically, we are one of the cheapest ones out there. And remember, we're talking about Brazil having to import corn here because they probably sold too much corn as they go down the road here. So, you know, maybe we don't know where they're going to get it from or whatever, but whatever they can't have to run out or that people have to go other places, it's going to help our corn exports. And hopefully that's going to be something good. You know, and they talk about the picked up the livestock in China and that they're going to need to be back and filling things along the way. They might be looking at, because of no DDGs, the possibility of possibly picking up some more corn too. So maybe that's a little bit why we're a little bit positive today, even with the negative numbers.
Even so, when we look forward, Jerry Goodell, to May, there's a couple of things that will hang over the market. And the first will be that 97 million corn acre number that came out of the USDA's March 31 prospective planting survey. That's what farmers told USDA they would plant, at least the first couple of weeks of March. Do you think, given the quick start we've had and the fact that soybeans seem to be what producers are planting early, will change things very much?
That's all hope. That's all hope. I know there's, you go back in history and try to look at opportunities for, oh, even a million or a million and a quarter type scenario. We really need at least 3 million. Let's get back to 94 here on this thing. But, you know, you back at history in that we've had increases like we did in 2007, where we increased substantially from the intentions to the June report, because that was the year of the announcement of 10% ethanol, and everybody was on board from there. Todd, you know, and I, that I've been kind of an advocate through all sources and through FarmDoc and other people here about trying to get some kind of a momentum and talk to the out there about the fact 5% adjustment in people's numbers would make a huge, huge difference here. We, when you put in this new number, by the way, you take that $2.092 billion beginning stocks and use the USDA's outlook numbers that they had in February and put those in, that's a 3.3 carryover stock. And some people feel like that the demand numbers they had were too high. And then, you know, that's come see, come saw. We got a long ways to go from there. But I don't care if it's 3.3, 3.4, 2.9. They're all too high. Mm-hmm. We need numbers a heck of a lot lower than that. Otherwise, this corn market is going to be wallowed in $3 values for some time to come from there. So I hope, like heck, that the people think about that. I know they say, oh, well, we hit the strong prices back in February and March. That was all directed towards the ethanol industry and the fact that there was some opportunity for them to kind of squeak by and stuff. That basis has backed off big. The values of the futures markets have collapsed. And now we're dealing with a different market, to say the least. And you start looking at the opportunities of looking at beans versus corn here. You can add 3 million acres of beans, and that's 150, 160 million more bushels. We can figure out how to use that. We cannot use that 3 million acres at 175. We just can't figure out where to put it. So that's my advocacy, and I guess I'll leave it at that, because it's important that the producers out there kind of make sure they understand the things we all know when we come to this table today, that those are the important things at the end, how much stuff we have extra and where we can actually kind of balance things out. Just because the price in February was better in corn versus now or versus beans, where's it going to be 6 months to a year from now?
Mike Suslo, do you think that new crop corn values in December accurately reflect the 97 million acres, meaning have they built this in already, or is it yet to come?
I don't think they have in the flat price, Todd. I think they have in the ratio between the new crop beans versus the new crop corn, between the stocks report and the latest WASDE numbers that came out on Thursday. I think one of the things that really, to Jerry's point, it's really important right now is what we saw this past week and why I think partly the grains did not want to drop as much with the big build in world stocks for corn and also with wheat for that matter, was because of this potential OPEC deal. I mean, that's really the heart and soul of getting the ethanol market back, getting the unleaded and the refiners blending again in the ethanol. To this week's shortened holiday week trade was a real eye-opener. Ethanol found 10% gains on the week, whereas the unleaded went down 1%. That's the exact opposite direction you want this market to go. You want unleaded to outpace ethanol, crush the premium in the ethanol versus the unleaded, bring back a discount in the ethanol against the unleaded, and then come out of the COVID issue before we lose summer driving season. Then I think you don't have to take the Dease corn to a 3 million bushel carryover.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mike. I think that when you look at the big picture on December, corn has been trying to build a base, you know, for this whole last week in that 350 area. And so I think in general, the trade is looking at it and saying, well, you know, we got a 2.5 ratio now between beans and corn, you know, right where it should be. What's going to happen? I've had guys tell me, you know, that we're going to plant more corn because that bean price is just plain awful. So nobody, I think, can put a good thumb on it, and especially as cold as it's been and as wet as it's been. Even guys down in the south aren't getting the grain in the ground. But I don't think any farmer should expect that we're going to see the kind of reaction in the marketplace that we saw last year to, let's say, delayed planting. But I think it could be a reality of where we're heading.
Well, I think the late planting's potential is there, like you say, though, there's no shot to be 460 out here from that point, unless there's just, you know, unless we're staring at Memorial Day weekend again with hardly anything planted. But it's not likely going to be Eastern Corn Belt at this point. It's going to be southeast or up in the northern plains type situation in that. And I think there is going to be some prevent planting issues that doesn't seem to be at all in these numbers that were issued here this last week or so. Yeah, there's no prevent planting issues, and I'll guarantee you the northern, you know, that spongy tundra up there in North Dakota doesn't dry out very fast. And to some extent, some of the, I wish in this strange little world here that we could actually get this CRP opened a little bit and get a little more thrown into there and that, because we really do not need the total number of acres we have out here. And that, in at this point, you know, we all don't have any good, great feel for where our yields are going to be. We know they're probably going to be better than last year. But from the standpoint, are they a 178 crop? I hope not. We can't afford that. And a bean number at 151, I think we've got a lot better shot of figuring out where to market that around the world from that standpoint. And that, and you know, I guess we still even got a few moving targets down in South America at this point. We did nick some numbers off today, and I think we could see a few more come off of those beans. And I was really surprised they didn't take a few bushels off of the corn numbers for Argentina and Brazil because of Rio Grande and northern Argentina being pretty dry. I'd love to see some kind of early dry down in Mato Grosso. Right now it's 50-50 if that's going to happen. That would make a big, big difference, and we could be a lot closer to 95 or something less than that if we could get that to happen. But I'm not sure I can tell anybody that's going to happen for sure from that point. But overall, just utilizing the new numbers here on the beans from the standpoint of the carryover stock at 480, you put it into the USDA's numbers from last February, and that we can still have a number right around 400 million on carryover with the 2.5 million or so, or 3 million at 86, versus the numbers that 83.5 would put out around 300 versus those USDA numbers. Now, I don't know. I'm not sure they're that outrageous at 2 million on exports, and I think the crush demand could be very good. I guess the interesting twist on it here is what size of crop we really had from last year on both corn and beans. Corn's probably overestimated. Beans is underestimated. Well, I guess we'll figure those out as we always go through the year.
Wayne Nelson, anything to add on the acreage debate at all?
Well, I mean, the acreage, we all feel that the 97 was valid, probably back at the time the survey was taken. We also feel that things have changed a whole lot since then, and the farmers undoubtedly have adjusted part of that, you know, at least one or two of those million acres in the meantime, just because of costs and what their bankers will tell them, number one. And then number two, I think, you know, a lot is going to depend on how we hold or hang in there in this is when can we get back to driving again, traveling again, and get some gasoline and crude oil being used, because that's what we really need, is to get these ethanol plants back to running really bad. We know that DDGs were up $50 a ton. I know I talked to my grandson, works at the ethanol plant in Linden. They were out of DDGs about the day that they shut down. They shipped all of them out. They went up so much. They're closing down their plant, and the last bit up there is going to hand sanitizer. They're starting to make hand sanitizer today of what ethanol they got left on hand. But I think the main thing is going to be, how's the stock market going to hang in there? What can we do with this crude oil as to keep this going? You know, we had a full moon low set here the last couple, you know, last night with the big moon and the super moon and whatever like that. And believe it or not, I think that does affect a lot of things. But can we hold this long term if we have long, good planning weather? We've got to have a weather problem or have China go on a buying spree to get this crop to go up much.
Mike Zuzlow, you alluded to the world numbers just a few minutes ago. Can you take us through those numbers really quickly as the ending stocks? Corn ending stocks were up. Wheat ending stocks are up. Soybeans were down.
Yeah, if you looked at the world numbers, the trade would be saying to themselves, let's keep buying the beans and selling that against on a spread against the wheat and the corn like they have been. I don't think they're going to continue with that mindset for too much longer because the spreads have just gotten so elongated or so extreme. You probably need the corn and wheat to follow along a little bit better than you have, Todd. But yeah, the 100.45 million metric ton number in the soybeans was right in the middle. A little bit lower than the average trade guess, while the wheat and the corn went past the highest trade guess on the Reuters estimates anyway, wheat coming in just under 293 million metric tons versus 287 last month, corn coming in at 303 million metric tons, and a little bit more than that actually, and that was over 2 million metric tons higher than the average trade guess and compares to 297.3 in March. It's interesting, this number came out when China said they're going to start increasing their imports by the trade, in the news wires, and yet the USDA actually reduced the Chinese kept the Chinese import number at 4 million tons and cut their domestic feeding by 2 million tons. So I looked at the world corn number, the world wheat number specifically, and said to myself, this doesn't make much sense right now, given what we're hearing in real time with Russia cutting their exports, Ukraine cutting their exports because of COVID, unless we still have a major problem in African swine fever in China, which is a possibility. But that's where the world numbers, I think I'm going to have to do some more work on those wheat and corn numbers to figure out where USDA is coming from, because they just don't match up with the real-time data. And to Jerry's point about increasing exports of corn out of the U.S. because of South American weather problems, that clearly was not in this month's report.
Yeah, so and not in the CONAB numbers either this morning, because the second crop corn there, Jackie Vakes, at 75.437 million tons, that against last month's estimate from the Brazilian USDA agency counterpart at 73.366. So, and I think that most of that was on increased acreage as opposed to ideas that their production would be, in terms of yield would be that much higher.
Oh, I think you're very right about that. I think the other thing that we have to take into account here is, we know with what Mike talked about the real, we know what the ratio between the dollar and the real has done. It's hit an all-time high of 5.32 reals per dollar. The price of corn in Brazil right now is 60% higher than it was during the first week of April last year. And so one thing that could work in our favor is the fact that they are just selling like crazy because these prices are unbelievably high. They're a lot like we were back in 2012, where we had we bought our inputs when they really technically were lower priced, and now we're selling our crop at a higher price level. They're in that same circumstance as we are, and so I think they're going to really push to get things out, and the countries like China that are buying from them are going to find that they're more expensive than we are. And it does cost more to take it out of Brazil. The only negative point that I would have to say is that we've got, with Pacific Northwest, there's definitely problems. Because where does Pacific Northwest get its corn and beans out of? The Dakotas, and they've had a lot of issues. So I think there are a lot of things boiling in the background. And South America is definitely a big part of what may or may not happen in this. I mean, Argentina's having problems with their harvest just because it's so wet. So there's some things that could help us in the long run.
As farmers go to the field, Jerry Goodell, they oftentimes pay attention to what's happening in the tractor and not so much in the marketplace. So they have a lot of corn, old crop, to sell. They have new crop to sell for corn and soybeans, old crop, soybeans for that matter. Which of the crops should they pay most attention to at this point?
Well, I think they have to keep their eye on the potential more than the reality in the short term. Maybe this wake-up call of basis going down and futures going down is going to be a wake-up call to say, hey, we got to continue to make that shift over a little bit here and that. And I've quite intrigued by the commentary here they had earlier about the amount of beans that are going in earlier here than corn in Central Illinois. That is, boy, that would never have been the case 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So maybe there is some things going on in that area from there. From the standpoint of, excuse me, I agree totally about the some of the factors going forward here. It's going to end up being what happens in this weekend and finalized out here on the OPEC and Russian discussions and that, and hopefully this 10 million barrels will be cut from supply, and hopefully there's some more coming that direction here on an overall basis. That's going to be a bigger factor, I think, in helping get some stability and maybe some bounce for various things that are going on in front of us here on weather. I would agree that the weather situation will be just as important in South America here, and how that we get some of these yields coming in finalized out. I'm still kind of feeling like the corn is going to have some reduction down there accordingly. And actually, I went back while we were talking here about the world numbers, and interestingly enough, the reason why we had this big jump in the world stocks was the fact that the U.S. bushels, that 200 million in stocks really coming out of the U.S. There's been minimal kind of stuff there. And on the wheat side, the interesting, of course, is that infamous, they increased China's stock by 2 million. They increased Russia's 1 million, and it's 1.9 increase in India. So would we say that only maybe Russia is the only one of those three countries that you might really consider that is viable potential of coming into the marketplace later on in the world? So that wheat number situation still is interesting. We have really started cranking things down on our worldwide stocks and also in the U.S. And when we all think about these long-term things we've learned in this business, one of the old adages is that wheat's your long-term leader. And it started to make some indications of that. Hopefully it is. We still need some more positive things to be. I think another action above $6 here, and that could be a good sign. And we've got enough people in the world worried about bread and getting their own supplies and have them extra stocks around from Egypt and other people feeling like they're not going to export some of that things, and that that's not a great long-term trading idea, but in reality of it is that I think that people are going to get a lot more understanding of food security than maybe they have been recently, and we're going to be carrying a lot more inventory and be a lot more reality-based. These are long-term cheap prices, and so if people don't realize that this is a good time to have a little bit more coverage around them, I think that would be a very positive for our grain prices, too, hopefully on a longer-term basis, because right now there's not hopefully a lot of downside. Let's hope there's a lot more upside.
Hey, Mike Zuzulo, wheat, pasta, bread, direct consumption has had a jump off of the coronavirus as people have tried to buy products that they can put into their pantries. Is this an opportunity for producers of wheat to go ahead and lock in some prices?
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of producers about 2021 and also obviously 2020. I think there's a real shot here, given the fact that late in the week, Egypt came in and said they need 800,000 tons of imports of wheat because everybody's getting nervous, just like Jerry's talking about. And, you know, we may lose 15% of the restaurants permanently here in the United States. That's some of the numbers being floated around. But that's going to really assault bacon. It's not going to assault wheat as much, especially in the short term. So if we could get a little bit more weather rally and keep Russia and keep Ukraine out of the markets for another 30 to 60 days, and we don't have to shut our export market down because of COVID, like we've had to shut some of our packing and processing down in livestock, I think we have a real shot at getting around 590, 615 in July soft red futures, and that's where I'd be plugging some holes to make some sales and probably doing the exact same thing in July 2021 and looking at maybe getting a little bit more of a wheat base underneath me in 2021 at this stage of the game. And just to follow up with what you asked originally, I think you hedge soy and you hedge wheat fastest and you play defense on corn. There's going to be some forced sales of 19 corn, I think, by producers here in the not too distant future. At some point, maybe right after planting, I'd be looking to buy those forced sales back. In the meantime, watch your wheat. And if we can get up to 890 and 915 in November beans, there's a gap at $9. I think the fundamentals from this week's report and what's happening in South America, it, you know, would present the possibility if that OPEC deal gets through and we don't have any more outside market negativity, then we could have the beans and led by the meal give us some, you know, rally potential. You just don't think of it in terms of 2013, 2014, 2015 as far as how high we can go. You really just look at what you can make money on and plug your hedges there and then defend. And that's kind of how I'm looking at it at this point.
I was just going to agree with Mike because I like to watch carry in the market. And when you look at the carry in the market, especially in the bean market, it's only 12 cents between May and November. That still says to me that we've got opportunity there. And that's why I think when you look at any move up, I would be hedging in the beans. I think the beans can continue to move perhaps with the soy meal if we get a chance. When it comes to the corn, I shouldn't say it, I guess, but I'm waiting to buy back advanced sales. We really pushed hard to get guys to sell at higher levels, and we're just sitting back here waiting now to try and put some calls in place, buy the futures, do something like that. We're hoping that we're not going to go a whole lot lower than what we are, but you just don't know. So we've been kind of sitting on the side waiting for an opportunity to come along. And then on hedges, just defending. That's all we've been doing. I still think that when you look at how many of us wouldn't like to see the market go higher, I just as soon see any of my option positions, any of my sold calls, bring it on, is what I say. You know, come and challenge some of that. That would be a wonderful place for us to be.
Wayne Nelson?
Well, I think, you know, we're all on the wish and hope side on this one, and right now, it's sort of dark out there. I mean, between the COVID, everybody home, everybody restless, everybody wanting to get out and do something. I think the sooner we could peak this, the sooner we've got a chance for a rally if we can just get people out and back to business and back to work and driving and doing a lot of things. That's a big if, and it's maybe a timely one in what we're trying to do. I do think that there is some, you know, big overhead in it is if we can't get the world economy back to going to try to make a big rally. But I do think that we're going to see the influx of government money, a lot of things happening. And I think a lot of people thinking that we can do a little better and we might not get near as cheap as we think we could. But I do think that any good rally is probably a place to sell something if you haven't got hardly anything priced or if you've got old crop stuff. And like I say, I'm going to probably say up 10 to 15 cents in this corn market, it's probably a place to get rid of some of your old crop corn.
And Jerry Goodell.
Well, end up some of the price points have been thrown out here makes definitely some sense, definitely in that 890 to 910 zone up there in values out there in that particular market. You know, you just there to today's 863, 64. It's not that unusual to something like that pop in here. I can't point to anything exactly that that would be something I can say that's definitely a possibility. I think it was a combination of South American slippages and output. Definitely. I think the energy issues and the whole ethanol world is a huge factor in here. We cannot afford to have this back up a heck of a lot further than it is right now. 40% down in driving miles is a heck of a number, and it's hard to drop your output of ethanol to even match anywhere close to that when you're talking about 10% of the mileage that's out there. So hopefully that is the positive going on in here. I guess it's back and forth here as to I've heard different opinions as to will people be doing a lot more driving vacations this year? Will they be taking vacations at all? I kind of feel like there's not going to be as many people on planes going along places. I think there's going to be a lot of, though, people are interested in getting out of the house and going somewhere. What day and what time can that happen? That's another question from there. And will the hotels and the restaurants and everything else be there for us? Let's hope so, because we definitely need that. From the standpoint of the wheat side of things, I kind of feel like that $6 mark is also an area out there that's has been to it. Hopefully we can get back to it. I think that's the key thing, as I mentioned before. This thing is really starting to give us some longer-term direction here in that, because we are at some really low levels here in the U.S., and price points, I guess, is all back to the classics right now. This is that, you know, the issues in the Black Sea are so much more important to wheat than whatever happens in Australia or Canada or even Europe. Europe and the Black Sea kind of end up going together. They have good crops together, bad crops together, or at least one of the two can have some problems from there. But at this point, the wheat side of things is there. Corn, man, when you're talking cash values here under $3, it's tough. It's tough to tell anybody to make any sales here. But the problem is that the values of there just 6-8 weeks ago aren't there, and they're not going to be there. So at this point, it's tough to not make some moves and get some cash out there. And hopefully we can get some more optimism about where new crop prices can go. At this point, the these values there, as I said, if in that 380 or above, and that when you can talk about 40 cents, 50 cent basis in the West, that's not great, but it's a place to get started because you can't really expect this thing unless we have a dramatic change in weather. And all of a sudden, wouldn't be surprised we actually had a stressful summer in U.S. Corn growing seasons. That would be the most surprising thing any of us would see. We haven't had one of those in so long. And that would be the major change that could occur in corn to make a significant kind of reduction from the mindset that we're on to 180 or 185 anytime soon. So hopefully that's I don't wish bad yields and bad weather on anybody, but at this point maybe it's time for a summertime weather change that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to us online anytime you'd like in our entirety. Our thanks go to this week's panelists, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Jerry Goodell from Midland Research in Chicago, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, and Mike Zuzlo at GlobalAnalytics.biz in Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.